WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Every generation has its bright young literary stars. In the late 60s, Willie Morris was one of New York's brightest. His new memoir, New York Days, chronicles the ups and downs of those times and the personalities that made them so lively. Book critic John Leonard has this review.
Most of the reviews of Willie Morris's absorbing memoir, like most of the memoir itself, stick to his rise and fall at Harper's Magazine. The Boy from Yazoo, Mississippi, by way of Oxford and the Texas Observer, took over as editor-in-chief in 1967, wanting to go to all the parties and wanting to change the whole world. He was forced out in 1971 by the Cowles family ownership and their biz school backstabbers, waving readers' surveys. It's payback time. The only revenge a writer's got on the bean counters who buy and sell him like a yo-yo or a pork future is to give us a book that pins them down through their buggy little eyes to a page of style, impales them on a consummate disdain. Even if Willie and his boys drank too much and ate too often at Elaine's, any magazine that in 5 years managed to publish Norman Mailer on the Armies of the Night, David Halberstam on The Best and the Brightest, Irving Howe on the New York Intellectuals, and Seymour Hersh on the My Lai Massacre was doing wonderfully well, thank you, no matter what they muttered at the country club in Minneapolis before John Cowles Jr. himself descended into est, nude dancing, and primal scream. But Morris, whose sweet tooth for the elegiac is notorious, has splendid passages as well on his Rhodes Scholar days in Oxford, where his best friend was Dennis Potter, the singing detective, and on Manhattan as a ghostly moonscape where the anonymous dead stare up at you, their own ambitions dashed, only fossils for the forensic anthropologists. And on poor Ralph Ellison, being called an Uncle Tom in the late 60s at Grinnell College in bloodthirsty Iowa. And most movingly, on marriage, the first casualty of vaulting ambition, after which the liver and the ego. He stands outside an office building, possessed as if in Dostoevsky, waiting to stalk his wife's psychiatrist, as once upon a time he'd followed Greta Garbo. Always, however, we come back to the magazine, more than a marriage, an affair to remember. Sure, there's lots of name-dropping, the Elaine's, Hampton's, Commentary, and Plimpton crowds, plus Andy Warhol and Lauren Bacall. But they are excellent names to drop, which is why some of us came from the provinces to begin with, and also why we read memoirs. And sometimes there's a sting attached. Morris, for instance, was a buddy of Norman Pod Horitz's back in his social justice days, before the Pod went right-wing neocon. He quotes Oscar Levant on Doris Day. I knew her before she was a virgin. I have some thoughts. The New Yorker in the 60s was a better magazine than Harper's, and Esquire was just as good. The New York Review of Books was more audacious, and National Review discovered more new writers, as would Rolling Stone. Fellows as fine as Willie, and females too, will always be fired, like his friend Bill Moyers at Newsday, his competitor Bob Manning at The Atlantic, almost anybody who ever works for Newhouse, even Edward R. Murrow at CBS. In every institution of our society, brilliant young men find surrogate fathers, and imagine in this relationship of privilege and protection that they can go on being brilliant, on their own terms, forever. But in a corporate culture, we aren't fathers and sons. We are landlords and tenants. We are owners and pets. It shouldn't surprise the brilliant young men, and yet it always surprises the brilliant young men when the party's over and the pets are put to sleep.
John Leonard is media critic for CBS Sunday Morning. He reviewed New York Days by Willie Morris.